what are you going to speak about tonight? So, told him somewhat. He said that he felt that it would be worthwhile before proceeding to the major topics at hand to speak in a more introductory manner for those that might not have the ideas in some of the things that that I intend to speak about. When we hear about the name the Rishon Baal Shem Tov or Hasidus, different images are conjured up. For some people, the most obvious topics at hand, speak in a more introductory manner for those that might not have the ideas in some of the things that that I intend to speak about. When we hear about the name the Rishon Baal Shem Tov or Hasidus, different images are conjured up. For some people, the most obvious manifestation of this would be in terms of Levush, Hasidim dressed in a certain way, Hasidim dressed in a certain way, Talmidim and Baal Shem Tov dressed in a certain way. But clearly, that won't do, because as we're all well aware, there are many, 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 many people that would be very, very uncomfortable with the title of Hasidim that dress in what we would call the manner of Hasidus of Levush. A classic example that I always shock people who are not so knowledgeable in the highways and byways of such things with is the example of Reb Amram Blow, who led a group of Kanoim out of the Agudas Yisrael in the 1930s after the passing of Avraham Zonnenfeld. A group that came to be called the Turek Katan. Turek Katan and Reb Amram Blow were Misnagdim. Misnagdim in the old tradition of Litvish Misnagdim, who held that the Derech HaChassidus was a terrible perversion of some sort. And yet the Turek Katan would certainly be the last ones to de-emphasize the importance of what some call Yiddish Levush, Jewish Levush, and certainly the Talmidim V'Chazon Ish and Risk and Eretz Yisrael, other people that we know as Misnagdim, again these terms are superficial terms, but they'll do for the meantime, also have emphasized the Inyan of Yiddish Levush, and even today in the Olam HaYeshivas, certain things connected with traditional Litvish Levush, frock coats, Hamburgs, things like that, have become more popular, so obviously Levush won't do. Other people conjure up images of something geared towards simple folk. Superficial historians often give this description that the Baal Shem Tov came to the simple masses of Eastern Europe that were very downtrodden, they were impoverished, it was right after the Katshatz, so on and so forth. And the Hasidus came for the simple folk, to give the simple folk something in their religion. And of course that won't do very well at all, because the most superficial perusal of who were the Talmidim of the Baal Shem and who were the Talmidim of the Gros Magid, and throughout the first 150 years of Hasidus will reveal that we're talking about Geonim in Nigla and in Nista, amongst them many names we're familiar with, that wrote Svarim B'Nigla B'Nista, the Baal Tanya, the Shirim, and just mention a few off the cuff, I mean the Haflah, and so on and so forth. And on the Haflah, the tradition is that Rav Shmelke, from whom there are no Svarim, his brother, that Rav Shmelke was always the Haflah's Rebbe in Nigla. So again, you get a little bit of an inkling that this historian perspective cannot be accurate. So a little bit of confusion here. It can't be Yiddish Levush. It can't be a movement for the masses. Who knows? Now let's further complicate things a little bit. The Parshas Vayishlach, Tavshin Yud Zayin, Satmar Rav, in the Chiddush HaTorah B'Shal Shubis, which was published in the Divrei Yoel. Satmar Rav, in the middle of a discussion then concerning what was then the Sinai Milchama, goes into a very lengthy tirade, says that there are people that want to say that the Shita that I am espousing here is contrary to Hasidus, it's contrary to the Baal Shem, to the B'ditch V'Rav, to the Moshe Leib Tzatzeva, to Rav Zisha. I mean, you know, listing all the Rebbes that are associated in our minds with Ahavas Yisrael, that his sheep is a steer with that. He says, no, it's not true. And besides, he says, Derech HaBaal Shem has ended. There is no more Derech HaBaal Shem. It's finished. It's over with. No one knows what it is. No one remembers what it is. It's over. It's finished. Forget about it. So here we have the Satmar Rav, who's again very much associated, was associated in the popular mind, the Satmar Rav Tzvan Ravacha, saying openly that there is no Hasidus. Finished. It's over. I was just looking recently. I saw that the Shemin Amunim, the Bada Lerot, brings down the beginning of his sefer, Shemin Amunim, a famous quote from the Tzanzirav. The Tzanzirav also said that Derech HaBaal Shem would only last 150 years. After that, it would be over. Tzanzirav. And it's brought down also the Satmarav in the V'yal Moshe at the end of Mamash Al Shavuos. Also brings down the same thing, again in response to the same critique that his sheet, who was a steer with Derech HaBaal Shem, he says that Derech HaBaal Shem is over, because the Tzanzirav said it was 150 years. What's going on? Again, these people that we've associated all our lives, in a superficial sense, with Hasidus, Hasidim, are saying that's over. Okay. Just recently, there was published in Eretz Yisrael two small booklets, which are worth getting a hold of, just with the title Hasidus, by an anonymous author. This anonymous author is in reality a younger man, he's a Rav Mesivta Chas in Yerushalayim. And these two booklets called Hasidus deal with what the author sees as the fact that Hasidus not had that it no longer exists, but that its major points have been forgotten. Because in the Olam Hasidim, Hasidus has been forgotten. And he lists amongst the major points of Hasidus, he lists Emunah, Bitachon, Simcha, Tahara, Shviras Hataiva, Tikkun Hamidos, and so on and so forth. Again, topics that we've heard of, and that we know are good things, but we don't necessarily tend to associate them with Hasidim or Hasidus. Yet this author, in a very lengthy, two very lengthy booklets, goes on to say that these are Hasidim, and that Hasidim have forgotten what Hasidus is because it's become, as everything else becomes after a few centuries of kicking around, sort of an organizational thing. There are groups, they have group loyalties, the groups struggle against each other. You know, and we're all aware in Eretz Yisrael, especially in the last election, but even before the election, all sorts of disagreements and feuds amongst different groups, amongst Hasidim, Mishnagim, everybody. And he says, it's nothing to do with Hasidus. Hasidus dealt with other things altogether. So the question again becomes, what was the Derech HaBaal Shem? And finally, there's the saying, which is a tradition amongst all Chernobyl Hasidim, that the Chernobyl Maggid said that until Mashiach's time, any time a Jew will have a Zir HaTshuva in the furthest reaches of Deutschland, of Germany, and that was an illustration of great distance in those days, that Zir HaTshuva will come the Koach of the Derech HaBaal Shem. So again, Shatmarov saying it's forgotten, Chernobyl Maggid saying it's going to be eternal, others saying that it means this, others saying they don't know what it means anymore. What's going on? Okay, let us quote an Apikurtis, just because often from one's enemies, you can get insights into something. Gershon Shalom, who I'm sure we're all aware of, who is a student of Jewish mysticism, Jewish mystical movements, I'm sure we've all read of Gershon Shalom. Who, incidentally, I must always tell him, it's my favorite Gershon Shalom story, which I'm going to tell now. I don't want to be redundant for those that have heard it, but Gershon Shalom's major Talmud in one of his books, writing a biography of his Rebbe, the Havdil, Gershon Shalom, says that he studied under Gershon Shalom, was an expert in Kabbalah. That he studied under Gershon Shalom 25 years, and he thinks that, he's not sure though, he thinks that he believes in God. So, again, you get a certain inkling of what it means to be a detached scholar. One can spend 25 years immersed in the holiest of holies of Limudim in the world, and your closest disciple doesn't know whether it's all over, when it's all over, whether you believe in God or not. But be that as it may, Gershon Shalom writes that never before in the history he says that religious history was there within the span of a few years, such an explosion of religious creativity and spiritual creativity as there was in the 20 or 30 or so years after the Baal Shem Tov monks of Talmidim. And again, we don't need Geshen Shalom to tell this to us, because again, if one just looked at the Talmidim of the Baal Shem and Talmidim Magid, coming from all over Eastern Europe, coming from White Russia, the Mendel Vitebska, coming from Lithuania, the Balatanya, and Shlomo Kalina, and Rabana Kalina, and again from Lithuania, Slonim and Lefkovich, later on, coming from Poland, coming from Galicia, coming from northern parts of Hungary, coming from Ukraine, from all over Eastern Europe at that time, Jews came, Tzaddikim, Talmidei Chachamim, came to either Mezhbizh or later on to Mezrich, came, and each of them articulated, which is the fascinating thing about it, each of them articulating a unique and distinct derech in Avdus Hashem, each one of them with its own areas of emphasis and de-emphasis, but each one of them claiming to be and attaching their authority through the Baal Shem and most through the Gersa Magid as well. So again, we don't need Geshem Shalom for this, just looking at the history books we see it. And as the generations go along, this continues, an outbreak of religious creativity, creating different chadarim and different shitas and drachim, which in those days, of course, didn't mean party politics and vile, vile squabbles, but in those days meant the Einisha Chidushim in Torah and Avdus Hashem, and again spreading all throughout Eastern Europe, Poland, Galicia, Litva, and the Ukraine, essentially. So again, we're asked to say, what was it that united all these disparate elements? What was it that some people as different as, let's say, the Baal HaTanya, or Shishka, or Chernobyl, or Rizhin, or Stalin? I mean, what brought them all together? And when we'll be able to answer that question, we'll be able to get at what we mean when we say the Baal Shem Tov, the Derech of Baal Shem, and finally to answer the question which we're posing here this evening, what does the Baal Shem say to us, each and every one of us here in this room tonight? Okay, that was a bit of introduction. The Maanaim brings down in the Likutim on the Pasuk, Shalach to Shalach, Aim, it's a Ban Tikach Lach. The Maanaim says that Aim is Merumiz to Drashas, Yeshem Lamikri, Yeshem Lamasoy, the Lashon of Aim is Lashon of Drashas. Says that when a person hears Divrei Torah and Drashas, so that person should be careful always to send away, in the end, the drasha. Es habanim tikach lach, the kinder, the children, the toitzah lemaisa is what the person has to take to himself. So that when a person hears a drasha, a vat, a divat Torah, the point is not the vat. The point is what that says to us in our life for the rest of our lives after we hear that vat. They say that the Bitzigul Vodka, the Talmud of the Kotzka, the Bitzigul Vodka used to say that when he was Makabel of Torah from his Rebbe, he wouldn't want to hear a second one until he had been Misyageya, until he had achieved that Torah in his own life. So the Torahs and Vata are not discussions. They're not fancy things. And I so often feel, again, that we forget that. We hear a nice drasha, a shein of vat, a geshmak of deher. Certainly Torah has a geshmak, there's no question about that. But the point in Divrei Torah is the banim tikach lach. And certainly, again, we can talk about Chassidus and Baal Shem Tov, and hopefully in later weeks about other Kedoshim who enlighten our lives to this day. And the important thing to remember is that this is not a study. Not a study. We are not studying facts or a subject. I am forever horrified at the notion that one studies, let's say, the Musa movement. A person does a doctorate on the Musa movement. A person studies the subtle nuances between the Vardik and Kelem and Slavatska, and he puts together a paper and a PhD and a thesis on what it was. The altars of Telem, Slobodka, and Nevada didn't mean that, and the Rasul Slanta didn't mean that either. One doesn't study spiritual things. One doesn't study those that demand us to worship God. One cannot sit back and study intellectual tendencies in Jewish history and talk about Spinoza and Achad Ha'am and Bialik and Herzl and whoever it might be, and at the same time study Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and Rav Kook and the Baal Shem Tov Lahavdalah of Galus. By doing such a thing, I'm not saying, people that know me obviously know, I'm not denouncing and I'm not bemoaning secular studies. I'm not saying we shouldn't know history. What I'm saying is we must differentiate between studying secular history, between studying those that taught because of such people lunch, and on the other hand, studying something like Musa and the Bali Musa or the Bali Hasidus, because these we don't study. These we confront. They look at us and we look at them and we confront ourselves. We look into the innermost corners of our neshamas and our minds and our hearts, and we say, what are they demanding of us? What are they saying to us? How is my life different now that I've looked at Slovakia? What is Kelim saying to me? What is Rabbi Yisrael Salanter saying to me today in 1989 in the YU dorm of the YU Beis Medrash? That's how one studies Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And that's the spirit in which I hope to be able to talk this evening about Dr. Baal Shem. That was just an introduction. Now, we have to dispel a few more false notions, and now we're getting a little closer, I think, to the Nekudah stuff. There's a famous letter in the beginning of the Noam Elimelech from a son of the Noam Elimelech. His name is Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar wrote a letter there to a chassid that apparently had asked the Noam Elimelech about certain chassidisha minhagim or psakim, you know, when one should say certain tfilos or how the Rebbe is noyig in certain things and certain halachic shilas. He apparently wrote a long letter with these sorts of questions in, and it's kedai to look at. Unfortunately, all the Noam Elimelech that are in the YU library are old editions that don't have the letter in it, so have to buy a new edition if you want to see it. But the Noam Elimelech instructed his son to answer him that somebody who asks questions like this, which he described as pshtusim v'havolim, has no idea what avodas Hashem is, has no idea what derech hasidus is. And then he goes into a long tirade, and I mean tirade in the positive sense, as to what derech hasidus is and what the Baal Shem wanted. But he says, certainly it didn't mean certain minhagim. And I know, we know about certain hasidish minhagim. We know about minhagim in general. There were yeshivish minhagim, and there were hasidish minhagim, and the Bali Musa had minhagim, all sorts of minhagim. But minhagim certainly are not what we're talking about. We speak about a derech in avdus Hashem. A derech in avdus Hashem is far, far beyond minhagim. Not to de-emphasize the importance of minhagim. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something far deeper than minhagim. Again, if a person opens up any sefer which deals with a biography of the Bali Musa or the Bali Hasidus, one will see that they perform certain times certain miraculous events. Again, this is part of the tradition of any derech. I mean, there are mitzvahs from the Gra brought down. The legend brings down mitzvahs from the Gra that they did certain things, they saw certain things, they had certain abilities, certain supernatural abilities. About it, it's all shiloh. I mean, the Gemara Moed Cotton says the tigs on the tatum lost there. It says that Sali goes with the tatum from the Kayim. Avad the tzaddikim of certain tzaddikim in the Gra, with the Gra, the Baal Shem, whoever it was, they had these tzaddikim. But once again, vastly secondary. All the talk they tell the mice, you know, the Chazanish told somebody how to do an operation, or the Gror learned Kabbalah from Shem Bayochai. I'm sure he did. I mean, Chavim Chavim brings it down. But that, however wondrous and miraculous it is not what we're talking about. There's a famous Pshitz Chavad, that when it comes to Oysos and Moifsim, that's necessary for people that are completely Megushim Dik. That are of Avos Bnei Chum, that are in Kamrius, that are from the Bechina of Chum, that these people need miracles. They said that when the Kutka first came to Lublin, that he lost his watch along the way. And he walked into the Lublina the first time, and the Lublina said, Ingeman, obviously you need Anaya Zega, you need a new watch. And obviously, it was an open case of sort of a simple sort of Ruach HaKodesh sort of thing. And the Kutzker answer is in his own inimitable style, the Kutzker answer, he says, what's main to Rebbe? He says, what does the Rebbe think? I came to the Blin to waste my time with Ruach HaKodesh. So I came to the Blin to learn how to serve Hashem, not to waste my time with Ruach HaKodesh. So once again, I wanted the second point that we are saying is not the point, is this business of Ruach HaKodesh and Oisus and Moisim, which again, Tzadikim had this power. I mean, until today, until our own generation, whether whoever it was, they tell Moisim, or Moshe Feinstein tell Moisim, from the Biskarov, from the Chazanish, from the Satmarov, from the Belzov, of others. But that's not a Vodas Hashem. That's not what we're talking about. Finally, again, as I said before, in terms of Torahs, Torahs are very, very nice. Torahs are very nice. Intricate, complicated, long Torahs are very, very nice. I'll never forget, many, many years ago, I was sitting in the company of the present Sperat Ever. And at that time, the present Belzerov had just become Rav. And somebody said, in the presence of the present Sperat Ever, he said that he said very nice Torahs on Shabbos. It was very nice Torahs. Sperat Ever said, give me a chumash. I can also say nice Torahs. Give me a chumash, I'll say Torahs. And who can't? I mean, there's little brains. You can say nice Torahs, right? Anybody can say nice. Kasha, Medrash, Kasha, Teret, Pshat, Pshat. Anybody can say nice Torahs. But once again, the Pshat is not the Torahs. There were Hasidish Rebbes that Badabki didn't say any Torahs at all. There were Mekomos where they didn't say Torah at all. The famous sort of joke they tell over the difference between the Munkach Chassid and the Rishon Chassid. The Munkach, they used to say long Torahs. Hungarian Rebbe said very long Torahs. So Munkach said long Torahs. And Rishon and Chernobyl in general, Rebbe's barely spoke at all. And they tell over a mice that the Munkach Rebbe used to say that I have a big problem. He said, my Chassidim come to me for Shmei Atzeres and Torah. And you know, first I daven for the Yomid, and then I come to the Tish and I say Torahs for hours and hours, and I sing by the Tish and I dance by the Akafis and that whole thing, and it finally comes to the last Tish, the end of the Torah, and if my voice is a little bit hoarse, the Chassidim go away from Munkach disappointed. He said, envision the Chassidim come, and the Rebbe doesn't daven for the Yomid, he doesn't say any Torahs, doesn't say any Shed, doesn't say anything. He says, he davens in a room, and Vision and Chernobyl, the Rebbe didn't daven in the Beis Medrash, davened in a room on the side of the Beis Medrash, and Vision and Chernobyl. He says, the Rebbe davens in a room. He said, on simplest Torah, before the Yontif was over, one of the Chassidim said he was able to see the Rebbe Shtramel, he was able to see the spitz, the top of the Rebbe Shtramel, and he goes home happy. So again, it's a bit tough job in Munkach because, you know, have to keep performing the whole time. But the point of this humorous remark is very simple, that Torahs are very nice, but Torahs, again, are not the point. The point is much deeper. The point has to do with Avdus Hashem, with Pnimius and Avdus Hashem, and Pnimius and the Neshama of the person. In fact, the Baal HaTanya, and we all know about the Baal HaTanya, Shnei Zalmud Ladi, Baal HaTanya, who is the author of a reworking of the Shulchan Aruch, Baal HaTanya was a big poisik, the child and shuvas from the Baal HaTanya. Baal HaTanya was known as the Ge'onim of that Tekufa in Teres HaNigla. Baal HaTanya used to write to Reb Zisha, who he was very friendly with, the Rebbe Reb Zisha of Annapolis, who I'm sure you've all heard of. He used to write to Reb Zisha and refer to Reb Zisha as the Sar HaTorah. Sar HaTorah, the Prince of Torah. Zisha was the Sar HaTorah. And they used to ask him, Shani, Reb Zisha was not noted to being amongst the Ge'onim, amongst Tamidi Amadi. Reb Zisha, you know, Reb Zisha sort of wander around Europe and dressed incognito and perform tovas for people and chop firewood for destitute women and take care of the assignment and raise money and all sort of, you know, he'd dart into a town and do a favor and sort of dart out and go wandering along, and we all know, we all heard Reb Zisha, I'm sure, and Reb Zisha was from Ge'onis, no one ever heard any Ge'onis from Reb Zisha, there are barely any tovas from Reb Zisha either, and the Baal HaTanya called Tish Tzara Tzaya, and they asked me, the Baal HaTanya said that Reb Zisha was in reality bigger than he was in Ge'onis. That Reb Zisha was in fact bigger than the Baal HaTanya in Ge'onis. But once again, Ge'onis is part of what makes the person Oved Hashem. So to say that Ge'onis is the point, Ge'onis is part of the point. The point is to be an Oved Hashem, the point is to be Mekabel Olam HaShemayim and Pnimius Neshama. Okay, now we have it, now that we're beginning to get to the point. We've cut aside a lot of fat here. We've cut aside talk about Levushim and Hagim and Moisim and all sorts of things and Torahs and all sorts of extras, which are all very, very nice, but they're not the point. The point is Pnimius, the point is Pnimius Neshama, the point is Avdus Hashem that we're talking about here. Now, we talk about Avdus Hashem and the Baal Shem Tov. We have to turn first to one of his major Talmidim, the Toldos, the Bnei Yaakov Yosef of Polnoya, author of the famous work Toldos Yaakov Yosef, which is certainly a good work if a person wants to begin somewhere, although it's a very complicated sefer. It proceeds. First the Toldos builds Lomdash of Tulpulim in Pashim and Halacha very often, and then with the Drashna, and only at the end does he deliver what he's the point. But the Toldos works with several basic nekudas. One of the basic nekudas Toldos works with is that there had developed in Klal Yisrael a certain sense of pirud. Pirud is a word that he uses very often. A certain sense of separation was occurring in Klal Yisrael between different factors and forces. One pirud, he said, is the pirud that was occurring between Jews and their leaders. And by leaders he meant both the Rashi Kehila and the Talmid HaChachamim, that a separation had occurred between Klal Yisrael and the leaders of Klal Yisrael. No more was there a warm sense of kesher, of reciprocal openness between Jews and the leaders of Jews. Now this does fit in a little bit with the historian's picture, that the masses. But the whole thing, not just the masses. We're talking about Bali Avoda, Bali Torah. There was separation. The leadership and the masses were separate. And I'm sure that, you know, we can relate that to things that we know about as well. The Rabbi Yochanan Nachman Strifka used to say, in relation to this point, to give you a little inkling of what Tolstoy is talking about, he used to say that Nachman Strifka is a Chernobyl dynasty. And they didn't say any Torahs, and the Rebbe didn't daven for the Amid, and they didn't do any singing. They were very big on Anava and Pashtus and Tmimus and Shiflis. And when the Rav Pesach the Rebbe first came to Yerushalayim, they used to walk around themselves serving the Jews that would come to them for Shabbos with the soup, with their bekesher. They hold onto the bekesher with his hands, or the Nachumshah, Nachum Zivka. Part of the Pashtus, Tmimus, they can avoid them. And Rav Yochanan, who was the first one, once asked himself a kasha. He said, and he doesn't know why Jews come to the Zivka. So he doesn't say Torahs, he doesn't sing, he doesn't dance, he doesn't know anything. Why do they come? The Pashtus says, Mayim Ponim Oponim, Yitain Leiv Ish Nozeth Pnei Chavero. He says that, Pasuk says that as water reflects the face, so does the heart of a man reflect the face of his fellow. He says, I get up in the morning, and from the Arizal, there's a minute to say every morning, Harini Makabal Alai, Mitzvah Seh Shavai Haftar Ach Kamocha. He says, I get up every morning, I say Harini Makabal Alai, the Mitzvah Haftar Ach Kamocha. And he says that, Ilzug is Nit Nomit Mol Alai, and I don't say it just with my mouth. It's made this talk is really macabre the mitzvah of a harvest as well. To my opponent, I like them, they like me, they come. There's always to figure out. There was an opening of hearts. The Toldos bemoans the situation before the Baal Shem Tov, but there was a closing off, there was a separation. The Talmid Chachamim, the Rashi Kehila, and then there were people. And there was no openness, there was no kesher, there was no kashrus between the leaders and the people. The second period that the Toldos talks about is a period amongst Klal Yisrael themselves. That amongst Jews themselves, there was a growing period. And Rav Kook, when he talks about the Derech Baal Shem and his essay Derech HaKhiyah, also mentions this Nekuda, that until the Baal Shem Tov, there was a sense of separateness, people from each other. One of the Nekudas that's emphasized in the Sfarim of the Baal Shem and of the Talmidim is not just the Habash Yisrael, which we've heard about, but a Havas Chaverim, which is something that you don't really find mentioned that much before. A Havas Chaverim, that a person must be ba'achdus with his Chaverim. And really, I mean, that's quite a deep point because, you know, it's one thing to talk about a Havas Yisrael, you know, it's one thing to be involved with Jewish causes and to worry about the status of Jewry throughout the world, and it's another thing to be nice to the guy in the room next door. It's often far easier to be involved in the klal of Jews, that is to be involved in the prat of the person who who just dumped something on your foot there in the Beis Medrash or whatever it is. It's far easier to love Yenim than it is to love the person right here. So the period between Levavos was taking place in Klai Yisrael. A third Nakuda is the period between Jews and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Three kinds of period. The Talmud mentions this always. Third kind, period between Jews and the Ribbono Shel Olam. That although, obviously, we're talking about the mid-1700s here, although the Haskalah had not really hit too bad yet, certainly not in Ukraine, where the Baal Shem is, certainly not in Mezhbiz, in these places, but there was a sense of period between Jews and the Ribbono Shel Olam. That close, warm shaychus that a Jew, or any human being, but certainly a Jew, should have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the sense of God and God's presence, God's proximity, God's closeness, was being lost. And the Maisa, we see that can happen. We see that a person can sometimes certainly be a big Lamdan. I mean, that's obvious because there are many Apikarsim, noted Apikarsim, that were Lamdanim, that were Baki and Shas and Poskim, and even in Kabbalah, I guess, and Shalom, but and still had no Shaitas to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But not only can a person be a big Lamdan, but even a person can sometimes do Torah mitzvahs and be removed from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Whether it's because of gaiva, which the Ochas Tzadikim says, the Ochas Tzadikim, murder the Ochas Tzadikim in the beginning, I think it's the beginning of Sha'ar Nava. The Ochas Tzadikim says that one Maisa Mitzvah that's done with Anava is Zaycha, 1,000 handfuls of Mitzvahs and Maisa Mitzvah done with Geis, with gaiva. So again, there are a lot of reasons why a person can sometimes do Mitzvahs and yet be Rachid from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I mean, an obvious example is Geis. We'll be discussing later on. The Klal is a certain dryness that can creep into anybody's Avdus Hashem. I mean, the Navi is always talking about it. I mean, learn Rav Mendel Hirsch on Navi. I mean, this is not something new. I mean, Rav Kook also fits in the Baal Shem Tov with those throughout the history of Klal Yisrael who have come to remind us that Torah Mitzvahs is to bring us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there is a God in the world. They once asked, I think it was Rav Aaron Kalina, but I'm not sure, that why did he go to Mezhbiz? He says he went to Mezhbiz to learn, to know that there's a God in the world. What do you mean there's a God in the world? We don't know there's a God in the world. He says, you say there's a God in the world. We know there's a God. So that to know, to really know, the Pnimius Nishmasai, to know that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam in the world, again, to overcome that period between Jews and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, to overcome these three Perudim, he has overcome this, the Baal Shem's Derech was geared to overcome this. How? In what way? How do we overcome, and this is not just for those that consider themselves Talmidim of the Baal Shem, I gave it to each and every one of us sitting in this room, to me and to you, to everybody. I mean, how does a person overcome this triple period, the period from one's fellow Jew, the period between leaders and the people, and the period between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How is that period over? Okay. Now, what I hope to do in future weeks is each week to select a certain Nakuda from Baal Shem and his Talmidim, and hopefully to include also much from the Balei Musa, for the simple reason that I'll be quite honest with everybody sitting here. What a person needs, what everybody needs, every Jew needs, is hadracha to become a warm, passionate Eved Hashem. L'maisa ha-bedracha yesh l'machah. There are many, many different ways to approach the book, but an approach there must be. There must be an approach. It must be an approach that causes hisorurus, that causes hisorakshus, that causes mesiras nefesh, that causes Mesiras Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that causes Mesiras Nefesh for my friend in the next room, that causes Mesiras Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. There must be a derech that causes these things within us. I'm not going to be a person for to come and say, the doctor, Stalin, or Zidachev, or whatever it might be. It might be Kelim, it might be Slobodka, it might be Nev Shachayim, but it's got to be some way in which we root ourselves in a derech. And from that derech, we take the chiyus to make all our moments in this world impassioned, meaningful moments by Kodesh Baruch Hu. So as we explore these different Nakudas, I hope not only to be working with Chassidish Sfarim, but with Sfarim of the Bali Musa, and Rav Kook and Rav Hirsch, hopefully, as well, as we go along. This week I felt that, I felt that we should begin from one of the central teachings in the Shittas HaBaal Shem, which is on Emuna. Obviously, Emuna is the aside of everything. And we see it, if we'll explore a bit Baal Shem's Derech and Emuna, we'll come to understand how everything in the Baal Shem's Derech is geared to overcoming these kinds of pirud and bringing us closer to our fellow, to our leaders, and to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. So, Emuna. Again, this week, maybe we'll have to do Amun a little bit next week also, because I mean, obviously I have a little introduction this week. Oh, Amun. All right, let's talk about the way this is usually done. All right, before we get to the way it should be done. Everybody has heard about philosophy, right? Go to prestigious university, and we take courses in philosophy, and we take courses in everything else. Courses in Jewish history, and courses in literature, and courses and courses and courses, all geared, I think, fundamentally, to give us as tough a time as we can ever have in ever developing a love or a feeling for any of these things. But, nevertheless, some do overcome the difficulty. I never forget it. And the first time when I first went to become a Rebbe, I had to watch a school priest, and I saw a test they were giving there on Moby Dick to the girls, and this teacher had a test there. I mean, you know, name the fourth crewman on the third boat that they were lowering off the side of the Pequod, you know, and list, you know, who knows? And I never get thinking of that time. I mean, if perchance anybody was touched at all by Melville, there is no way, after having to study and prepare for these tests, that any of that joy and delight in literature is going to remain. And if that's the case for aesthetics, and if that's the case in natural beauty, again, how much of natural beauty do we lose? But whatever, if that's the case in terms of so-called worldly quote-unquote knowledge, how much more so when it comes to the Torah and to the Rasan Hashem. So, talking about philosophy and things, faith, right? So we go to a course, or we study it, and we hear there are different approaches to faith. There's the classical approach to faith, right? And we know this was very big in the days of the Rambam and the Habbal Aquinas, and the classical philosophers, they proved God, they proved the truths of faith, again, the five proofs of the existence of God, all kinds of proofs, the classical proofs, and they debate back and forth, and somehow, it's really cute, somehow they always come to the same conclusion at the end of all the proofs, that they have all proved their own religions in the end, after all the proofs, which seems rather strange. You would have thought that some of them might have come to a different conclusion after all this proving on it. All the questions are always answered, and everything is always proven in classical philosophy. Well, after a while, for some reason, in the history of mankind, people didn't like this anymore, and they said the proofs were all no good, and they rejected classical philosophy, and they became rationalists, enlightened. The classical proofs don't work anymore. You add them up exactly, you know, just like in 1300s, you put the classical proofs in people's heads, and they all added up. So all of a sudden, in 1700 and 1800, you put the classical proofs, and people said, they didn't add up anymore, and everybody became enlightened. And there were two kinds of enlightenment rationalism, proof things. Only the physical world is real, proof things. Two kinds of enlightened rationalists. There was the happy enlightened rationalist, who was also like the French Revolution guys, that thought that if we think really hard about life and society, we're going to make everything good. And, you know, we're just around the corner, just a little more, just another revolution, just a few more heads under the guillotine, you know. If Napoleon can conquer just another country, or whatever it is. And happy rationalists, that there is no God, there is no meaning, but we're going to make everything fine. Then you have the other kind of rationalists, sort of in the tradition of Lucretius, and maybe like Santayana would be an example of that, sort of the sad rationalist. There is no God, there is no meaning, only matter is real. Wow, life has no meaning, isn't that sad? And that was sort of the other side of the coin, the other kind, the happy rationalists and the sad rationalists, but they didn't like the classical proofs. Okay. They got also romanticists, I don't know. Romanticists said, there is no truth, there is no meaning, we'll make up our own, and we'll have a lot of fun doing that. So, again, there were a lot of different approaches to truth. Now, then you have German idealists,
that they were kind of like the romanticists, but instead of paintings and drawings and songs, they liked to write really fat books with a lot of words and capital letters. And they were like, the guys like Hegel, who really just thought that whatever he said, if he capitalized it, it became metaphysical and became ultimately true. But again, this was another attempt to sort of restore faith, which had been stripped from reality. Now, the religious people, Jews and lahavdil non-Jews, are really in retreat while all this is going on. They're really kind of on the run, and they're trying again the classical proofs and historical proofs. They're trying to meet the disprovers kind of on their own ground with rebuttals of certain sorts. And it's not working out too well. The philosophy gives two last gasps in the 20th century after everybody gets tired of the happy and sad rationalists, and after everybody gets tired of the big fat books, the German idealists, and all that. You come down to the 20th century, there are two last gasps of philosophy. One is called phenomenology, which meant that there is no God but being. And again, when you capitalize words, you can do a heck of a lot in philosophy. You capitalize the word being in phenomenology, and therefore existence somehow becomes what God used to be. And again, this is only good if you write big fat books, because again, the phenomenologists and Heidegger and Husserl and all these guys, they also were Germans, they were big fat books, and they tried to somehow use a lot of capital letters and make the world itself spiritual. That didn't work too well. And after World War II, the final fling of philosophy, pretty much, was existentialism, which was sort of the notion that nothing makes much sense, but you got to make your own sense out of it, and it doesn't really matter what sense you do make out of it, and that's all. You see, you had like, you know, Camus with the myth of Sisyphus, and you had Sartre, who said there was no meaning and no existence, but was a doctrinaire mayor, was communist, you know, and you had things like that, but it all pretty much petered out. It was in until like, say, the late 50s, and then that became out also. And the whole enterprise of endless talking and analyzing kind of sputtered, really sputtered. And today, again, what you have today is sort of linguistic analysis and things of that sort, but the grand tradition of analyzing and arriving at proof, at truth, had kind of run out of gas. And really, there is a direct tie-in between the society that Europe and North America has today, which is a society dedicated, again, fundamentally, we must be blunt about such things in order to be truthful, which is dedicated to pop childish entertainment and the pursuit of financial security. And this society that we have today, and the bankruptcy of the philosophic enterprise. Because people are tired. Just push it out to the Mitchell and saying, you know, 2,000 years, how long can you go on searching and arguing and talking? So people said, the heck with it, all right? I mean, I have cable TV, all right, there's Baruch Hashem, there's plenty of things to do and watch and see, and I've had enough of all this business about searching for truth. Okay, why do I give you this synopsis of philosophy, a man's search for meaning? Because emuna, real emuna, is much deeper than the philosophic enterprise. You know, Rabbi Lamb makes the point in Faith and Doubt, and, you know, I sort of hinted to it before. You know, you talk about the Rambam and Pesach Yigon, you know, you don't get the feeling that if they couldn't answer all the questions they asked, or make all the proofs that they made, you don't get the feeling they were somehow going to, you know, go over to the Karaites or go over to the Greeks or whatever it was. You kind of get the feeling that the proofs were all la'acha maisa. The proofs were la'acha maisa. The proofs were chizuk ha'emunah, they were not the stuff of the emunah itself. What then is the stuff of emunah? I got to tell you a very, very profound decision. Pasuk says, it's Hashem talking to Avram. It says, "Vayotze oso achutza vayomer habeitna hashamayma usfara kachavim intucha litpar osam vayomolo ko yezarach." This is the talk that Hashem gives to Avram. Rashi brings down in the third shot, the last shot on the word Vayotze Oso Achutza, Rashi brings an interesting medrash. The medrash says, Hotzio Mechalolo Shalolim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Avram out of the earth's Cholol, Hibiyo l'mala min ha-kachavim, picked him up out of the solar system, v'zeh lashon ha-ptacha milamala l'mala. That when it says, v'yotze oso achutza, it means that literally Avram was taken somehow beyond the physical universe, and from that perspective he was shown the kachavim and all of the cosmos. We have to stand with Rashi. Then the next pasuk says, "Behem in BaHashem, v'yachshavehu lo tzedak." The people from OTI have heard this verse, but it's a vort from the mitzvah bells that are and bells that ever are known as rabbanim, because they were also rabbanim and bells. So there's the Eshter bells of Shalom, the mitzvah bells of Rabbi Yeshua, the Friedrich bells of Yisachadov, and the left bells of Aaron, and the mitzvah bells of the Shiel, Rabbi Yeshua. And the mitzvah bells are like this. Emuna is deeper than Hakara. So that Hakadosh Baruch Hu took Avram, performed with him some kind of miraculous act. I mean, the exact nature of the act, I mean, we have to understand what the Medrash means. But he did some kind of miraculous act with Avram. He took him out of the solar system, out of the cosmos, something that would verify, in terms of sense data, would verify God, would verify the truth of what's taking place in terms of sense data. Next pasuk says, Behem in Bashem. We believe in Hashem. Those have said that the godless of Avram was that even after he had been shown, in terms of sense data, God, he still resorted and believed in Emunah. Because the Amunah are all the Moksim, so he had Amunah, he had more of Amunah than the Kohen Hedyot, who never saw anything. Kumta bells it off, and he said, think fuck. The godless of the Kohen Gadol was that even though he saw, still he believed. And they say the Kutzka, they once came to the Kutzka and said that a certain... saying of the Baal Shem, the famous saying of the Baal Shem, which is brought down in many, many Svarim, but the Degel Machne Ephraim, the Baal Shem's grandson of Rebbe Ephraim of Sadlikov, brings down in the Sefer Degel Machne Ephraim. Degel brings down the poem, and I'll quote you the exact lesson from the Degel. Very simple, very brief. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, Amar LeTalmidav, She'acharei kol ha-madreges ve'hasagas she'asagti. After all the madreges and the hasagas which I achieved by Avdus Hashem, and the Baal Shem achieved. Saying of the Baal Shem, the famous saying of the Baal Shem, which is brought down in many, many Svarim, but the Degel Machne Ephraim, the Baal Shem's grandson of Rebbe Ephraim of Sadlikov, brings down in the Sefer Degel Machne Ephraim. Degel brings down the poem, and I'll quote you the exact lesson from the Degel. Very simple, very brief. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, Amar LeTalmidav, She'acharei kol ha-madreges ve'hasagas she'asagti. After all the madregas and the hasagas which I achieved by Avdus Hashem, and the Baal Shem achieved some very high madregas in Avdus Hashem. There are letters from the Baal Shem that are just really mind-boggling in terms of the madregas and things the Baal Shem achieved. But after all the madregas he achieved, hineni meiniach osam, I leave them over, umachzik ani b'emuna, u'kabbalas elokusa yizbara. The modisiv, and even though it's written Pesiyam, and the fool believes, it's also written Shoyim Psoim Hashem. The Baal Shem said at the end of his life that after all his hatsagas, which again, which I said before, Ruach HaKodesh and Mofsim and Nisim and all those things. He leaves it all alone and he's Machzik Be'emun HaPshuta. What's the Pshat? The Pshat is the same as all these bells are there. That there is a Madrega of Emunah which is beyond discussion. And this is really the Pshat in the Rambam and the Pshat Yigon also. So what's the Pshat in all the proofs? Pshat in all the arguments? What's even the Pshat in the Kuzari? Because sometimes they contrast the Kuzari to the Psadia, right? They say Psadia was classical philosophical thought, analytical thought. The Kuzari was historical proof. Rabbi Victor Miller is very taken by this, and all his svarim, the tradition, the historical link stretching back to Sinai, and the Rambam seems to say also. But Allah Almighty, obviously, one can quibble even with such things. And that when the Kuzari does what he does, he's doing the same thing the Rambam's doing. He's giving chizik emuna la'acha maisa. He's giving chizik to an neshama that's already dove. Because emuna is something much more than any kind of proof or any kind of asana. What is it? There is a state in which a person, by virtue of tahara, torah, tefillah, midas, etc., there is a state of emunah. The emunah is a question of a virtue. It is not a question of a conviction. It is a virtue, not a conviction. All right? It is a conviction, perhaps born of virtue, that when a person is over Hashem be'emes, when a person is over Hashem ba'anava, with Torah, with tefillah, with mitzvahs, he acquired a tahara, tahara's hanashama, which allows him to establish a link with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it must be that way. Because if not, let's be frank, okay? Tomorrow, we'll walk out and we'll find some archaeological study of some sort has raised some kind of question, right? Or we'll study something else somewhere in some other textbook and we'll teach about it. And we'll have no answer, right? We won't know an answer, right? It'll happen. It's happened. Gonna happen. It's happened to me. It'll happen to you. It happens to everybody, right? We see a certain criticism, historical, archaeological, analytical, philosophical. What do we do? The answer is we do nothing. We really do nothing. We say, as the Baal Shem said, Emuna, ich bin anan nechlad, as the Baal Shem said. We say that we have a kesher in our neshama with our Kodesh Baruch Hu, which come what may, will not be disturbed. And the chizik for that kesher we derive from the spiritual sustenance of Torah and Tefillah. Yeah. Depending upon who we are, some of us like classical philosophy, and some of us like historical proofs, and some of us don't like any of it, and some of us like Rabbi Victor Miller, whatever it is. Everybody likes different kinds of chizuk. But it's chizuk. It's chizuk. It's not emunah. Emunah is a nekuda in the pnimius of a Jewish neshama, which gives us the ability to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite arguments, with arguments, and the way to achieve emunah is through Torah and Tefillah, and mitzvahs, and ma'asim tovim. And that emunah which we achieve is much deeper than any kind of even Ruach HaKodesh. Okay. Now what is the practical derivative of emunah? You know, we say, emunah, emunah, imam, and we believe. It's not so simple. Not so simple. There's a vot in the Baal Shem. Hashem says that any aveira a person does is in the end a son and emunah. It's pashut. Any avera we do is a chesaron on emunah. Because if a person really had emunah b'tmidius, really believed every single second, du shteit rabbanu shalom, that God is standing here right next to me and before me, obviously can't do an avera. If maloi chal aretz kevoidai, okay, there's no mocking for averas. So our whole avodas Hashem, limud haTorah b'asmada, midas, avodas haTfilah, avodas haMidas, taharas haMachshava. Everything we do is linked to emunah, the degree to which a person is committed to God is machshava against the hihurei tefiras, nus, or whatever. It depends upon emunah. If a person believes du shteit haKadosh Baruch Hu, he says no, it's vimish, asmada, whatever it is. When a person says, I don't really know the third Teretz and Tosfos, alright? Maybe I shouldn't go to the Reb Chaim right now. Maybe we should try to figure out what the third Teretz and Tosfos really is. Yegiyas HaTorah, Amelus in Torah, Ramona. Do we really believe that the third Teretz and Tosfos is of tremendous, earth-shaking, cosmic significance? That my clarity in this third Teretz and Tosfos is more important than my clarity in anything else in the whole world? Anything else, there's my pre-law, or my pre-med, or my pre-accounting, whatever pre-we-pre, okay? But it doesn't make any difference. The third Teretz and Tosfos is more important. My benching is more important. My Shabbat, my Rukh is more important. Emuna is the key to the whole spiritual binyan of a Jew. And when the Baal Shem came and emphasized Emuna, 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 he was really emphasizing a spiritual revolution. Nothing earth-shaking, you know? Like Mesillas Yesharim says in the first parak, things that we know, we tend to forget. But it's one thing to say, I believe, and it's another thing to say, I believe Torah. I really believe. And that requires constant yigia, constant chizik, constant reinforcement. That's what we say. It's very important for a person to achieve self-definition. You know, psychiatrists always say, Viktor Frankl, search for meaning, you know, in the concentration camps, the people that had self-definition, they survived much better in the concentration camps because they knew who they were. They had self-definition. It's very important for a person to have self-definition. Who am I? Who am I? I am a Jew. I am an Eved Hashem. I am a Kabbalah. Kabbalah's Omar Kishamayim. I believe in Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat Peh. I believe that every second of my day is avoided. The way I deal with my friend, the way I walk across the street, everything I do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Meloi Chodesh Kodesh. The Dagel, there's one more Dagel, and then we'll end with this last Dagel. The Dagel brings down, he says, the Dagel brings down that his, the Baal Shem is Dagel's grandfather, by the way. The Baal Shem is Dagel's grandfather. The Baal Shem used to say that Emunah is the Sheirish, the Chol HaTorah of Avodah. Pasuk in Tehillim says, Chol Mitzvaysecha Emunah. Chol Mitzvaysecha Emunah. So that we see, Mamash, the Pasuk in Tehillim, that the aside of all mitzvahs in Maisim Tovim is Emunah. Is Emunah. He says, the person who is not Mechazik his Emunah constantly falls into the category of becoming old and dry. The result of a lack of emunah is that tefillah and mitzvahs and Torah nasan etzlo kadavi yoshin v'ragla. It becomes old and ragla. Umas etzlo. There's a certain distaste in it. Nachamol, davening, learning, mitzvahs, maisim tovim. The same jerk that acted like a jerk yesterday. I mean, I saw him again today. You know, the whole terrible avodah comes down upon us. And he says like this. He says, that's the pshat in the Pasuk in Tehillim. Al tashlicheni li'ezikna. That God should not throw us aside. Li'ezikna means that when ezikna is referring to the zikna.